My name is Jack Joseph Puig. I'm the producer, mixer here in Los Angeles. I started off as a bass player initially. I worked in a couple different bands. One of my bands, we were doing demos one day, and we were having technical difficulties. And I went into the control room to see if I could assist and help, and found myself immediately gravitating to that particular side of the glass and found that I had a natural aptitude for it. And so I started producing and mixing records, and I wanted to empower the artist. Coming from an artistic perspective, I realized that that was really the diamond in the rough, and I wanted to use my ability and my talents to empower that. I started here in Oceanway working on a Black Crowes record, and from there I just kept going, and it felt great, felt natural. And this is my 11th year working in this particular room at this point in time, and I've worked on all kinds of pop artists to rock artists, every kind of artist you can imagine. Sheryl Crow, all the Crows, Sheryl, Black, County, Green Day, Weezer, Fergie, it just goes on and on. Stereophonics, Panic of the Disco, Ashley Simpson, 311, No Doubt. So this was sort of known as a Sinatra room, one of the Sinatra rooms. Sinatra went between a couple different places. This was one of the Sinatra rooms. So Sinatra kind of obviously made it very famous, and then it progressed through the years. It continued to have massive success with artists like Sinatra, I mentioned, all the way up to artists today, like a brand new act that no one even knows about. What's unique about this room is it was very, very common years ago, a couple of decades ago, for people to go to a certain recording studio because it had a sound. And then as modern consoles took their way into the business, along came with everyone using pretty much the same pieces of equipment, same consoles, same type of speakers, same type of reverb, same type of delay, same type of compressors. It just became very common. So the boutique-y element of a room was left behind. And at the same time, so was a unique sound left behind that was only attached to that particular record. So there was a time where people would go to a certain studio for that sound. And as I said, then it became not necessary any longer. And that's why when you listen to most records on the radio, a lot of them sound the same. What makes something commercial is when the masses deem it as commercial. So it becomes Norman Rockwell as opposed to a Mona Lisa. It doesn't have the same unique property. It's something that everyone hears as cool. And whatever makes a hit on a radio, if someone has a multiple amount of hits with that sound, then that's a sound that everyone chases. Not just the sound of the record, but the production of the record, the type of artist, the way they look, the way they feel, everything about them. You could make a record with one type of guitar, we'll say Gibson Les Paul. Could make the whole record, it's not a problem. But as we all know as record makers, it's interesting and a lot of fun and very artistic to be able to choose of different types of guitars. So a Stratocaster, a Telecaster, a Les Paul, a Gretsch, etc., etc., etc. This is the same thing. A DBX compressor and a Fairchild compressor don't do the same thing. They do totally two different things. One's not better than the other, they just do a different thing. This room really isn't that. This room is a collection of equipment ranging from the 50s up to something that just got released yesterday. It's not a vintage room, it's an everything room. The notion is it's a collage of equipment that have a sound and a feeling to them. And so when you make a record, as opposed to using the same piece of equipment that everyone's using, it's using different pieces of equipment that make those records sound a certain way. I guess another way of looking at it is a choice of having a box of 8 Criollas or 64 Criollas. You could easily obviously put two colors together in the box of 8 to create a third hue, but with the 64, that hue may already exist that you have in your mind. And again, because there's 64 choices, the colors can be that much greater. My choices with some of the gear that's in this room right now was based solely on a few criteria, one of which was just the way they sounded. I listened to different pieces of equipment. And as I went along and as I worked in different recording studios around the world, I would go into different people's studios and I would find pieces of equipment that I thought sounded fantastic or had a certain perspective or sound that I really found attractive to what I wanted to do. And I started acquiring them, like you would acquire a Stratocaster or a Telecaster or a certain guitar or a certain snare drum or a certain instrument that you found very attractive to what you wanted to do. Also, I was always in love with certain sounds of the different decades. There were things that were very attractive about Beatle records to me, but I also found things very attractive about an 80s Hall & Oates record, you know, and I found things that I thought were very attractive about a 70s record like Fleetwood Mac's Rumors or something that I thought was very attractive. So I had the notion, the idea of why can't I put those together? You know, why can't I take what's great about the 60s, great about the 70s, and great about the 80s and put them together? So in order to do that, I needed the pieces of equipment that were used in each one of those decades. So I started reading a lot, talking to people. I had mentors that taught me their techniques. I worked with people who worked in the 60s, who made successful records in the 60s, and I worked with people who made successful records in the 70s and the 80s to learn from each one of them how they did it and what they used to do it. And that was what determined what piece of equipment I picked. And that's how I built my box of 64 Criollos. A large part of the way that's achieved is a combination of using the analog and the digital equipment. Again, both of them. It's a mindset and an attitude. The 70s records had a lot of tone to them. The 60s records didn't have as much tone as the 70s records. And as we hit the 80s and on, we started to change that curve to a much brighter, aggressive, tighter sound. That was the beginning of the level wars in the 80s and the 90s, where it was all about getting things loud. Those 70s records have a very 3D dimensional perspective to them. Some things are loud because some things are quiet, and it's all relative. Something's on the left because something's right, something's black because something's white, something's close because something's far. The 70 records had that kind of an attitude to them. So when you make the records, it's not about seeing how loud you can get everything, but keeping in mind that if something's in the foreground, something feels closer to you. So the philosophy, it's the 70s philosophy of trying to get the three-dimensional perspective, which has to do with using some of great analog equipment that warms up the sound and not over-compressing. All of this starts with an aesthetic in the artist's mind. There's a place that you default to. And the object is to listen to the piece of work, the music that someone has made, and understand what it's supposed to feel like and make it come out of a speaker. A very interesting thing about our job and what we do is it's one-dimensional. When you go to the show, you appeal to all the senses. The movie industry gets to appeal in at least to two senses, the ear and the visual element of it. We only appeal to one. So what's very interesting about what we do is trying to find the X factor. Is it something panned in the left speaker? Is it panned in the right speaker? Is it reverb? Is it delay? Is it EQ? Is it brighter? Is it darker? Is it warmer? Is it fatter? Is it clearer? Is it distortion? You know, what makes you feel the feeling of what the song is supposed to be doing? If you first think about the song and empower the song, then you have a great chance of getting across what the artist is trying to get across with what they're saying melodically, lyrically, and phonetically. The one element that has never gone away is the song. So as we've gone through hair bands, rock bands, pop bands, ska, country, rock, every element of what we go through, hip hop, rap, it's still about, I want you, I need you. You left me. My life has not been as great as it's been. How do I get you back? My life is garbage. You treated me bad. It's all about those kinds of feelings, just framed in different ways. So, as ridiculous as this might sound to you, if you're working on a rock record, you probably don't want to have something that sounds real beautiful as a piece of equipment. Unless you want the voice to sound really beautiful because the artist is talking about something very, very sensitive and emotional. But meanwhile, the chaos is coming from the music that's around that voice. So maybe a lo-fi plugin, for instance, distorting guitars, or a compressor that we would have done before where we would have overdriven the compressor, would have used it incorrectly to create that distortion or chaos around the beautiful voice. I used to start with just the drums like most people did and built up on it. And I found in time that the best thing to really do is to just throw it all up very quickly I will spend the next 15 minutes all the way up to 45 minutes where I'll make quick balances and quick judgments without thinking about them and moving very quickly with just using my instinct. And as soon as I get to some place, I think it really sounds fairly good, which is generally will happen in 45 minutes. I immediately put a version of it down onto Pro Tools so that I remember my initial instinct. I also take a picture of the console at that point, and then I proceed. One of the unknowns for all of us is how the instinct and intellect work together. Your instinct has one place it goes, and your intellect has another place it goes. So obviously in mixing and actually in anything artistic, if you have the ability to manage your instinct and intellect, where you can go between the two effortlessly, is when you'll find you'll make the best records. One of the dangers with modern mixing and modern record making is you absolutely have zero limits. The only thing that limits you is your creativity. From a technical perspective, your ability to reach for a digital piece of equipment or an analog piece of equipment, or have the mixing console make the dynamic changes as opposed to the Pro Tools make the dynamic changes. You can do anything you want. Both those dynamic changes are different. So one of the pitfalls is as you go off creating, and as your intellect sometimes will take over what your instinct is feeling, you can get lost. And you can intellectually make something that you think is better. But the truth of the matter is that first 35, 40 minutes when you made those initial decisions were really what were right. So the beauty is to use the technology in your favor where you take that initial snapshot I described that makes your picture. And as you go along, you're able to go backwards if you need to in the mix tree, not just on the console, but also in Pro Tools. So instead of just doing each time you save, if you do a save as and you name it, you're able to go back. As far as the mixing versus the production, a large part of it has just been the way it's come and way it's happened. Production is a lot of fun because it's at the birthing of the song. And you actually are there when it's actually being created from zero to the beauty of what it becomes. The mixing has actually, in a lot of ways, some of the same feeling as production, because in production you can decide that you want to take the guitars out of the second verse and you ask the musicians not to play in the second verse. But in mixing, you can hit the mutes. And so effectively, there's a lot of creativity both ways. The difference is emotional. When you're there in the production, you're there as it's being created and you're helping shape the baby. And when you get to the mixing, the baby's, large parts of the baby is there. It's just whether or not you put a blue shirt on it or a red shirt on it. But they're both fantastic experiences. I would want a producer or an engineer or a mixer to understand that you can never lose sight of whose wedding it is. It's not your wedding. It's the artist's wedding. And our job is to be in the foreground and to realize what their vision is and believe in their vision and help them create that vision so that it's expansive and it touches the hearts and the souls of everyone that's walking the planet. Initially, when I started mixing here about 11 years ago, 12 years ago, I started keeping the tapes that you see on this console right now and the tapes that you see on the walls when you first come in for the purpose of if I wanted to go back to a mix, I wanted to have those. And as I started to fill up one of the walls, I realized how beautiful they were and what the symbolic perspective of them. So I'd made the decision to keep them up on the walls to remind me of some of the artists I'd work with and for other artists to come in and see them and feel inspired by them. The door as you push, as you go to leave the studio, is the Return to Saturn album by No Doubt, which I put on that entire wall. And the door to the left, which goes to the little lounge, is the Green Day record. And if you go into that room, you'll see tapes from Beck, from Goo Goo Dolls, from every act you can imagine. Weezer's Pinkerton that was done in this room. Every different artist I work with, I just put the tapes up to remind me of them. I've been using Waves plugins since the beginning, and I wouldn't know what to do without them at this point. Waves is the best plugin company, without a shadow of a doubt. They have the best graphics, best aesthetic to them, and without a shadow of a doubt, they have the best sound to them. And the Wave plugins are either the most neutral in some cases, and in some cases, color the sound, but they color the sound in a beautiful way. Yeah, Waves products are extremely, extremely reliable. They're the most reliable piece of digital gear I know of. So Waves and I decided to work together because we have a mutual respect for each other. And I absolutely admire them, and there's really no other company I'd prefer to be with. And this initiative that we're doing, the notion is to actually take some of the pieces of equipment that are in this room. We're starting with the Pultec and their Fairchild. But what we'd like to do is create plugins with some of the other pieces of equipment in this room that are not accessible to 90% of the people in the recording industry because they don't exist or they're not aware of them. Waves, again, because they're so reliable and so accurate and top at their game, I have the confidence that as we develop different pieces of equipment that we will model and modify, that they'll be extremely accurate and faithful to the initial perspective. With all vintage equipment, snare drum, a guitar, even an analog console, all of it is unique to itself because of the way it's built. They're not built in a mass way like they are now, and they're not a one and O component. So therefore, they have a life of their own. Sometimes the components can be out of tolerance due to age, due to the initial specs. They may or be in or out of what the initial specs were. Or for whatever reason, a certain tube, a certain transformer, whatever is in it, has its own unique property like a human does. You can get 25 of any one of these particular pieces of gear, and every one of them has their own color and sound to them. So the ones that we have, we've carefully picked out of a bunch that have that unique character and sound to them. And that's what we want to model so that the consumer, and so artists, whoever they might be using them, engineers, producers, anyone who be using them, could use them in a home recording environment, whether it be an apartment, whether it be a commercial space someplace in the city, or even a professional studio in Montana, Alaska, Germany, anywhere in the world. The Fairchild is definitely, without a shadow of doubt, the most classic compressor that's ever been built. The Fairchild is the Mustang of cars, in a sense, in that the Fairchild is a go-to product or piece or compressor for everybody. It's very simple. There are two knobs, and it has a sound to it, and it's most likely been made famous mainly by the Beatles. Because it's tremendously, a lot of the Beatles sound was a Fairchild compressor. Fairchild compressor is also a piece of gear that, when you insert it in or go to use it, colors the sound in a very beautiful way. Technically speaking, it has 6386 tubes in it, four per channel, that are a very, very variable mu tube. They're a very unusual tube, and that's a large part of the secret of the sound. You'll find the same component in a few other compressors, like Gates have them, and Collins use them as well. And that's a large part of the secret of that vintage sound. The Fairchild compressor possesses a beautiful attack to it as well as a great release to it. So what that means is it really preserves the front end of the note in a really fantastic way, in that it tightens it up and makes it have a great attack, but which defines the note, as well as a beautiful length to it, if you'd like. So it's kind of a universal compressor in that it does everything in one, besides the fact that it colors the sound really beautifully. If you have a harsh-sounding instrument or something that doesn't have a lot of depth or beauty to it, the Fairchild is fantastic makeup from that standpoint. I believe the Fairchild is most likely most loved on a voice. It's probably the most preferred place it's used. That would also include background vocals. Some people like on guitars or acoustical instruments. Electronic-oriented things like machines or anything like that, it's okay on. But anything that's acoustic, dobro, acoustic guitar, electric guitar, anything that comes from acoustic perspective initially is always amplified in a very beautiful way by the Fairchild. My Fairchild has been used on the Goo Goo Dolls recordings that you hear. Probably most famous, you might think of the song called Iris that was in the City of Angels soundtrack. Had a beautiful sound to it. And it was definitely on that I used it on. I used it on Bird Girls Don't Cry by Fergie, which was another, fairly substantial record. And John Mayer's Your Body's a Wonderland is another record it was used on. 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton. I even use it on Bette Midler's Wind Beneath My Wings. They're all classic records that set up those artists' careers. And again, if you think about those records, the voice in every one of those records is something you remember. Pultec is, again, another classic piece of equipment. Very simple, only a few choices of the frequencies. But once again, it has the same properties to it in that, in terms of what it adds from the low frequency to the high frequency, can be a little bit absent in terms of you don't hear the piece of equipment. That's one of the beauties about actually the Pultec, is that if you want something to be brighter or more warmer, it allows you to do that, but you don't really hear the sound of that piece of equipment in it. The only sound that you notice with the Pultec is that, again, like the Fairchild, partly because of how it's built technically, has a beautiful, beautiful, round, gorgeous warmth to it and a very creamy top end that you don't get with a lot of pieces of equipment. I think in terms of go-to equipment, I believe that all of us hear a certain way. And there are pieces of equipment that fit with the way we just hear. So, specifically talking about the vocal here, for whatever reason, the Fairchild is a piece of equipment that just works with for how I hear things. What you have to watch out for is with a vocal, for instance. I will EQ lots of times before to repair whatever the curve is that I don't think, in my opinion, is correct. And then the compressor does what a compressor does in terms of changing the ballistic of where that vocal is. Maybe the vocal doesn't have enough, the diction isn't great. Maybe there's not enough attack or front end of the note. So the compressor will give me, I'll adjust it to get that. And then I might put another equalizer afterwards, because the compressor not only compresses the sound, but also compresses the equalization, because equalization is none other than level. Sometimes I need to put another equalizer after that in order to make up what the compressor takes away. Or I might want to use the equalizer initially to make the compressor react a certain way. And then I might want to undo some of that afterwards. The one thing that compression does is it brings up the low-level information. I don't view compression in terms of how loud I can make something. I view compression as one of the most musical pieces of equipment I get to use, because compression has a time constant. And therefore, it changes depending how you use it, how hard you hit it, what setting you use it, how long you let it to compress, when you desire for it to attack. So one element of the compressor is it brings up that low-level information, which means it brings up the tone in something, the length of a note of something, the room that might exist, the natural room that might exist in something, the natural echo that might exist in an instrument. It allows you to bring that up. So that's what I use a lot of compression for, is to bring up that lower level information that you don't hear once you start to fill in the picture with all the different instruments. What I'd like to do with what we're doing here with waves is be able to model those certain pieces of equipment and give people certain settings that I think work really well for vocals, so that they have the ability to immediately go start where I start. They need to make it their own, as they should, because everyone's an artist and everyone has different abilities. But not everyone has some of the pieces of equipment that I have. And I'd like to be able to share that with people so that they can have the chance of enjoying what I've been able to enjoy for quite a while.